We're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, from the first canto, chapter 19, entitled The Appearance of Sukadev Goswami, text number 5. Ato vihaye mam mamum chalokam vimarsito he attaya purastat Krishnam griseva madhimanyamana upavisat prayam amachanajam. Ato thus vihaya giving up imam this Amum, and the next. Cha, also. Lokam, planets. Vimarshito, all of them being judged. Hiyataya, because of inferiority. Purastad, herein before, Krishnangri, the lotus feet of the Lord, Sri Krishna. Sivam, transcendental loving service. Adimanyamana, one who thinks of the greatest of all achievements. Upavisat, set down firmly. Prayam, for fasting. Amarchanadyam, on the bank of the transcendental river. The Ganges or the Yamuna. Translation. Maharaj Parikshit, set down firmly on the banks of the Ganges, to concentrate his mind in Krishna consciousness, rejecting all other practices of self-realization, because transcendental loving service to Krishna is the greatest achievement, superseding all other methods. Purport. For a devotee, like Maharaj Parikshit, none of the material planets, even the topmost Brahmaloka, is as desirable as Golok Vrindavan, the abode of Lord Sri Krishna, the primeval Lord and original personality of Godhead. This earth is one of the innumerable material planets within the universe, and there are innumerable universes also with the compass of, also within the compass of the Mahatattva. The devotees are told by the Lord and his representatives, the spiritual masters or acharyas, that not one of the planets within all the innumerable universes is suitable for the residential purposes of a devotee. The devotee always desires to go back home, back to Godhead, just to become one of the associates of the Lord in the capacity of servitor, friend, parent, or conjugal lover of the Lord. Either in one of the innumerable Vaikuntha planets or in Golok Vrindavan, the planet of Lord Sri Krishna. All these planets are eternally situated in the spiritual sky, the Paravyoma, which is on the other side of the causal ocean within the Mahatattva. Maharaj Parikshit was already aware of all this information due to his accumulated piety and birth in a high family of devotees, Vaishnavas, and thus he was not at all interested in the material planets. Modern scientists are very eager to reach the moon by material arrangements, but they cannot conceive of the highest planet of this universe. But a devotee, like Maharaj Parikshit, does not care a fig for the moon, or for that matter, any of the material planets. So when he was assured of his death on a fixed date, he became more determined in the transcendental loving service of Lord Krishna by complete fasting on the bank of the transcendental river Yamuna, which flows down by the capital of Hastinapur in the Delhi state. Both the Ganges and the Yamuna are Amartya, transcendental rivers, and Yamuna is still more sanctified for the following reasons. Maharaj Parikshit, after having been cursed to die within 7 days, showed extraordinary detachment. He was not at all hesitating or worried about his kingdom. He was not thinking of all the opulence that he was possessing. He was still very young. He had a beautiful wife. So materially speaking, everything was very wonderful. And it is also mentioned in the fourth chapter that not only did Maharaj Parikshit have all the material facilities, but the sages of Naimisharanya were inquiring, but the king was also a great devotee, and so many people were dependent upon him. And yet, he just left everything and sat down on the bank of the Ganges, just like that. Maharaj Parikshit was not considering himself very important. Although he was the emperor of the world, and in one sense, the population of the world was under his protection, still Maharaj Parikshit was very much aware that life is temporary, and that in this material world, we can, for a while, occupy some position. For a while, as long as is destined, are we allowed to make some contribution. And whenever time is up, right, then simply there is no point in trying to resist that. But Maharaj Parikshit was fully aware that everything in this world is going on under the control of the Supreme Lord. And he could see now, by destiny, my time has come. So therefore, he immediately left home. He immediately went to a suitable place, to the bank of the transcendental river Ganges, where he was facing north and getting ready to leave this world. It is said he was attempting to fully concentrate his mind in Krishna consciousness, rejecting all other processes of self-realization. Of course, Srimad Bhagavatam is highlighting this principle, pure devotional service. Savai punsa paru dharmo yato bhaktir atoksha je. It is pointing out that pure devotional service is the supreme occupation, and additionally it also gives certain standards by which that pure devotional service is to be performed, that it is meant to be free from any personal motivation, and also that it is meant to be not interrupted. Again and again, we may do a little service, then withdraw and enjoy our senses a little more service, little sense gratification. And in this way, we may not be engaged in uninterrupted devotional service. But Maharaj Parikshit was very determined to now engage in uninterrupted devotional service. Of course, we understand that Maharaj Parikshit had all along been a devotee of the Supreme Lord. But one of the qualifications of a great devotee is that he does not consider himself a devotee. And therefore, Maharaj Pariksit, while he was seated there on the bank of the Ganges, was considering himself an offender. He was thinking that I have totally acted out of line. Somehow or other, I became overwhelmed by thirst and disrespected this great sage, Samika Rishi. And somehow or other, I committed the heinous offense of hanging a dead snake around his neck. Okay? What a foolish act. And therefore, Maharaj Pariksit was thinking, I deserve whatever reaction may come. And let that reaction just come. Let that snake bird come. Let it bite me. He was very repentant. In a spirit of great humility, Maharaj Pariksit was realizing that I am not at all qualified. Up to this point, I have been engaged in worldly affairs. I have lived in all this opulence. I have enjoyed royal facilities. Now that only 7 days remains, I will not waste a moment. I will not waste a moment. Not even sleep. No time to bother even with eating. 7 days is a short time. So there's actually so much energy spent in making arrangements for our eating, in making arrangements for digesting and so on. All that, a little on the left side and all these other things, forget it. Right. Just simply, 7 days, for 7 days we can do without. That. So he was in the mood of not wasting a second. Every single second, he was trying to fully concentrate his mind in devotional service. Of course, no ordinary man can do so. It is not that one can live a life of in material sense gratification and expect to just renounce at the end of life. Abhyasa yoga yuktena cetasa ananya gamina paranam purusham divyam yati partina cintayan. Only by practice throughout a lifetime can we actually develop this state of consciousness where we can fix our mind on the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord. Krishnangri sevam. Krishnangri sevam is not so easy. Because the mind is also covered by lust. Avritam jnanametena duspurena nalena cha. The lusty desires are present. Indriyano mano buddhir asyadistanam uchyate. They are situated within the senses, within the mind, within the intelligence. And therefore, one cannot just so easily give up everything and focus on the Supreme Lord. Therefore, Maharaj Pariksit could do so because he was an accomplished devotee. A devotee who had throughout his life been absorbed in devotional service. Who was performing his worldly duties simply in a spirit of service to the Supreme Lord. Just as we see here in Mayapur, the example of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, who, while engaged in worldly duties as a district magistrate, was at the same time simply absorbed in devotional service. And even in the course of performing these material duties, took advantage of his position to achieve many spiritual purposes. Reorganizing the standards in the Jagannath temple in Puri, clearing Vrindavan from dacoits, and here in Mayapur, searching out the birth site of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Orissa, getting rid of that false incarnation, Bisikishen, in this way. Whenever the opportunity arose, he was using his position for transcendental purposes. So Maharaj Pariksit also was particularly interested in devotional service. He had the same qualities as his grandfathers, as Maharaj Yudhisthira, who also simply was interested in worshipping Krishna and in sending that message into the world. Now Maharaj Pariksit was ready to face death. And in one sense, death is the moment of truth. Throughout life, one can bluff, one can show, but at death, there's no more bluff, right? At death, one is being confronted with the reality. One has to, whatever one has actually realized, that is what will manifest. So in this way we see that Maharaj Pariksit had the perfect mood. Still, he was not in any way proud. Still, he did not think, I'm qualified. He did not think, all right, I will spend my time concentrating my mind on Lord Krishna, and that's it. Maharaj Pariksit, rather, was in a humble state of mind. So we see that Sukadev Goswami will take advantage of that situation. And Sukadev Goswami will appear on that particular place and speak Srimad Bhagavatam. Sukadev Goswami will speak that perfect transcendental knowledge of Srimad Bhagavatam, the science of pure devotional service, and Maharaj Pariksit will inquire. Of course, we understand that the entire pastime is taking place by the arrangement of the Supreme Lord. And that Maharaj Pariksit, although he did such an important service as the king to preserve the principles of religion, still, now, in this final moment of his life, he was about to do something of maybe even greater importance or equal importance. He was there to inquire with perfect transcendental consciousness. And therefore he was asking the pertinent questions. One cannot just ask questions properly. Maharaj Pariksit was knowledgeable. He understood the goal of life. And therefore, he asked the pertinent questions. He asked, what is the duty of a man who is about to die? In this way, Maharaj Pariksit was opening the opportunity for Sukadev Goswami to speak Srimad Bhagavatam. And in this way, Bhagavatam again became revealed. Srimad Bhagavatam, we find, is eternal literature. It is described to be the literary incarnation of the Supreme Lord. It is not that Srimad Bhagavatam is historical literature which was spoken at a particular time in history and was not existing before. Srimad Bhagavatam is eternal transcendental knowledge that is being revealed again and again at different intervals by the arrangements of the Supreme Lord. Still, this particular moment where Maharaj Pariksit was becoming ready to receive Srimad Bhagavatam is very important. And it was after that Vyasadev wrote down the Srimad Bhagavatam so that Srimad Bhagavatam would also be available to the less qualified men of this age of Kali. We see that the sages of Naimisaranya were quite concerned with the situation of the upcoming age of Kali. Prayena prayusa sabya kalavasmi yuge janaha. They were concerned with the people of this age of Kali. And they were specifically asking questions pertaining to that situation of the age of Kali. What can be done in this age of Kali? And we see that it is said that Krishna swadamu bhagate dharma ginadi bisaha kalu nastatrisamesa purana kodinoditaha, that this Srimad Bhagavatam was specifically spoken for this age of Kali, and that it would, when the vision of people is being lost, kalo nastadrisam esha, when vision is lost, then the Srimad Bhagavatam is establishing the truth. Srimad Bhagavatam establishes from the very beginning, dharma prujita kaitavo, that all other processes are simply to be rejected. It is establishing that anything but devotional service to the Supreme Lord is cheating religion because it doesn't relate to the constitutional position of the living being. Also, when Vyasadeva had been writing down the Vedic literature, it is said that he had written down all the Vedas, even the Mahabharata, which includes Bhagavad Gita. He had written the topmost philosophical work in the form of the Vedanta Sutra, and still he was not satisfied. He was despondent. And Narada Muni appeared in that location and made it clear that he had simply not sufficiently glorified the Supreme Lord, and that all the other activities described in the Vedas are certainly auspicious, but they are not adequate to actually satisfy the soul, because they are offering some purificatory activities which can give temporary benefit, which can even make a person advance through the modes of material nature, and from a material sense offer him a better condition for spiritual life, but it cannot actually in any way situate anyone in his eternal position of devotional service. And therefore, it is not possible to be satisfied through these processes. It is described that Srimad Bhagavatam is the essence because it deals only with devotional service. In the Chaitanya Bhagavat, we find a situation where Devananda Pandit used to give lectures on Srimad Bhagavatam, but was misinterpreting the text in an impersonalist way. However, in due course of time, he became rectified from that misconception, and then he repented, and he began to lecture properly. And when, in that condition, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu met him, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, "Yes, Devananda Pandit, you should know that Srimad Bhagavatam, in the beginning, in the middle, and in the end, only deals with pure devotional service to the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna." And that is the point, that Srimad Bhagavatam is always dealing with devotional service. Even in those sections of Bhagavatam where we are reading about the creation, we should understand that all these descriptions of creation, of the of how the material energy comes about, are always descriptions showing us the relation that the material energy has with the Supreme Lord. And therefore, ultimately, these descriptions help us to develop the transcendental vision, to see beyond the material energy. Because the problem is that the conditioned soul cannot perceive the spiritual realm. The conditioned soul cannot see the spiritual sky. The conditioned soul cannot see Krishna. So, therefore, the conditioned soul will rather see the material energy. And the material energy creates so many perplexities, so many urgent situations, so many things that need to be dealt with, or trouble is coming. So there is a need for defending, to make so many arrangements that everything is stable, that everything is secure, that everything is nicely cared for in the material energy. And constantly we are looking, is everything under control? Is everything well balanced? And we make adjustments. So it keeps one very preoccupied. And then the opportunities come for material enjoyment. And there are so many. And we are able to try and enjoy these opportunities. And especially when we are young, we have so much ability. When we are younger, we have so much energy, and therefore we have all the energy to take all the opportunities. As we're getting older, the opportunities become more and more difficult to take advantage of them. It's like one time I was in Germany, and there was a Sunday feast, and they had invited a clown, a Russian clown from a state circus. And he was very good, and one of his acts was that he was able to spin balls. So he had a whole bunch of balls. He was spinning around, a ball on each hand, on his fingers. He had two balls spinning on his toes. And as the final act, he had a little stick on his chin, and there was a fifth ball spinning on that, and he was doing that. So it was like impressive, no doubt, right? Not an easy thing to perform. But then again, the thought might occur, what has this got to do with the Sunday feast? what does it have to do with Krishna consciousness? So since it was before the class, I tried to give like a Krishna conscious purport to the thing. So I was thinking that, well, maybe I developed some sort of vision of a stream of opportunities, and how the stream of opportunities is flowing in front of us. And when you're young, You take out four or five and you spin them around and you bounce them around and you just sort of show what you can do with them. And it's like, just see me, eh? How far out I am. And then the opportunities keep on flowing and the energy levels go down. And one, with time, becomes more purposeful, right? No longer playful, but one comes to the point of just picking out the right opportunities, right? Got that. Got that. And then the stream of opportunities moves on, but time is moving along and our energy levels are going down. And we see some opportunities and walking like, well, anyway, let it go. I didn't want it anyway, kind of thing. And like this, we begin to miss more and more opportunities. We have to let them go. But every once in a while, we still grab a good one. Until, in old age, the stream of opportunities goes by. And two old men sit on a bench and point and said, that was a good one. And it just goes by without any action at all. Anyway, that was sort of the image of that particular lecture. So in this way, we are going through life looking for to take advantage of so many opportunities that we have, especially when we are young. And in old age, we try to hold on to the opportunities that we've already taken advantage of and just hold on to that and secure it now and just nail it down so that it won't crumble. Right? No longer looking for so many new ones, but making sure that whatever we have established, that it's there to last and that we can even carry it forward, at least to the next generations and so on, if we then have to die. Like this, throughout our life, we remain completely preoccupied with the material energy. But in the Bhagavatam, we see such transcendental personalities. Maharaj Pariksit, so transcendental, just leaves everything. What to speak of Sukadev Goswami, who absolutely had no interest in, first of all, entering into the material world, wanted to stay in the womb. Finally, after his father has spoken Bhagavatam, in due course of time, he comes out. It said he still didn't come out after his father had spoken Bhagavatam because he had some doubt. He became a devotee, but he thought, even if one is a devotee of the Lord, engaged in devotional service, still, my father became a householder and became attracted to engage in sexual activity. No, it's too dangerous, this material energy. So it is said that Krishna personally came to make him, to convince him, you will not fall prey to the material energy. Sukadev Goswami wondered after his birth through the world, naked, and had no interest in this material world. We were discussing this the other day in the Bhakti Vaibhava course, how Sukadev Goswami had no desire, right, to even impress anyone. He was like walking through the world. He was like, people were treating him like a madman. He did not want to show off in any way his true position. No, if they take me as a madman, so be it. There's one passage in Lilamrita, Srila Prabhupada Lilamrita, which I liked, and it was described how one person, upon seeing Prabhupada for the first time, had great difficulty with the accent. Many people found it difficult to understand and sort of was straining himself to hear what Prabhupada said. But then he said, the more I was trying to listen, I felt that this person, right, obviously was very qualified, very scholarly, He had come from very far. He had come to give a particular message. He had a point to make. So therefore, I felt that I should somehow or other try, in spite of the difficulties with the accent, to understand what point it was. I could see it gone through so much trouble. And as I was listening, I was just thinking to myself that the amazing thing about this person is that he's not trying to impress anyone. He's not in any way trying to impress anyone. And that, he said, I found impressive. So it's a very nice feature. That is the qualification of a perfect instrument of the Supreme Lord, who is not adding anything, who's not trying to screw out any obscure meaning out of the message of the Absolute Truth, but simply presenting it as it is. So this is what Srila Prabhupada came to bring, especially Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the complete science of the Absolute Truth, he came to bring that and just gave it to us. And the result is that we have a crystal clear focus. A crystal clear focus. We see that one of the problems that is being raised in Bhagavatam, that Vyasadeva, due to writing all the varieties of Vedic literatures for different people on different levels and encouraging them to at least do something for purification in various Vedic literatures on so many levels, that Narada Muni was strongly condemning it, saying that you, in this way, you have actually obscured. You have obscured the real goal. Yeah. So Srimad Bhagavatam makes it so clear, and therefore we are most fortunate that we are receiving this Srimad Bhagavatam. Although we have no qualification, less than anyone ever had before in any previous era, we are getting a quality of knowledge, right, which is higher than has been available to many, many great pious sages, many, many great personalities in the past. And we are getting the full, complete transcendental conclusions. It is quite amazing. So, in that way, we can see how potent this movement is. And we sometimes forget to appreciate the incredible value of what we have received. The gift of Srimad Bhagavatam, the direct association of Krishna in the form of these words, the direct association of Krishna in the form of the holy name. Here, the residence in the holy dham. All these, the association of most exalted devotees. Here in Srimad Bhagavatam, we get the opinions recorded of the greatest personalities of all times, that are from all over the universe. This is the most fortunate movement. And Srimad Bhagavatam is the substance. It is the substance of the transcendental knowledge that carries this movement, and therefore it is stated, Tatvag visargo janataka viplavo yasmin pratisloka napadavati api namanya nantasya yasun kitaniyats srinvanti grinanti gayanti sadava. That This Srimad Bhagavatam can bring about a revolution in the misguided, misdirected civilization of impious men. And that's us. So by taking shelter of Srimad Bhagavatam, we can change. And therefore we are very much indebted to Maharaj Pariksit, indebted to Sukadev Goswami, indebted to Vyasadev, indebted to all the other acharyas who bring us Srimad Bhagavatam, indebted to Srila Prabhupada, indebted to Pradyumna, his Sanskrit editor, and all the other editors, right, who have made this. Prabhupada once said that actually he did it. Right? Actually Pradyumna. Actually he did it. He actually translated this Bhagavata. And that was not just some sort of praise without any substance to it. Pradyumna's contribution is very significant, and the contribution of so many others. And we are all indebted, greatly indebted. And when one is indebted to a Vaishnava, then the only way to pay back that debt to the Vaishnava is to basically do what he wants. That's the way to pay back the debt. We have to do what he wants. So, therefore, we have to simply give up our own agenda and do what all these great Vaishnavas wanted. And that means deeply readjust our own lives according to the instructions of Srimad Bhagavatam, and then simultaneously distribute this transcendental knowledge all over the world, and as Srila Prabhupada desired, place Srimad Bhagavatam in every house on the planet, which is quite an ambitious program if you think about it. Okay, with that I will end. Maybe some comments or questions.
Remember what Srila Prabhupada once asked your devotee, what means an old man? So the devotee said, someone who's about to die. God said, how do you know if you're going to die? You know when you're going to die? So how we can really not just wait for old age to be in this mood of preparation?
Yeah. We can die any minute. So we have to be prepared. And we cannot think, I have a lot of time. I'm still young, I have material desires, and therefore let me spend some time satisfying my material desires within limits. I will not step too far over the line, a little bit sometimes, but I'll keep on track in devotional service. It's like, just like the fish who's swimming in the water, and who sees this terrible hook in the water, this nasty hook, and this delicious piece of bait hanging on it. And he thinks, I'm not going to bite in that hook. No way. I'm not stupid. But then he sees that bait, and it looks too good. And he thinks that maybe if I nibble a little bit on the side, very carefully, I'll avoid getting hooked. And he tries, and it works. Nibble, 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 nothing. And then he tries again until the fisherman, Maya, this time fisherman, sees the floater moving with an expert of movement of the wrist, whoop, pulls that fish out of the water, hooked again. So we think sometimes that we are so expert in allowing ourselves just to nibble a little bit admire. No. But that's not not a fact. We must be very careful. In the Grihastha ashram, there is a license for sense gratification, but that license doesn't mean that we are obliged to take as much as possible. Rather, as little as possible. As little as possible within the confines. Because the real goal of life is to get out of here. And there's an urgency. There's a great urgency. We can die any minute, as you said. So, better become a pure devotee as soon as possible. As soon as possible. Don't think, well, I'll save that for later. Now I won't leave devotional service, but I have all the time of the world. No guarantee at all. I'm a little deaf.
Often when people say that why I can't speak, immediately presume that why I can't is a physical way, or you get attracted to my physical way to actions. But so much tests are on a subtle level.
Okay. So I'm repeating the question. The question is that when we speak about that Maya, that will come under the influence of Maya, we think that oftentimes Maya will come in some physical way in front of us through some sort of physical opportunity. But there's also a whole other aspect to Maya, which is all happening on the more subtle level of the mind. What about that? As we stated, that indriyano mano buddhir, lust is situated in not only on the sensual platform, where the sense objects are addressing itself to our senses and then enter into the mind, and the mind starts to dwell on the sense objects. And then the intelligence starts to make plans of how to actually realize that goal. No. There are already impressions stored within the mind. And these impressions, there are already all kinds of previous experiences with sense enjoyment which we remember and to which we are attached and which from time to time surface. So we're also dealing with attacks of lust from within. So both from without and within. So, therefore, one must be very careful in controlling the mind. First of all, we must be careful in association with the sense objects or people who are attached to sense gratification, yojitam sangi sangam. And we should then also make sure that we are in a pure environment and that there is good association, strong hearing and chanting, so that we can purify the mind and get the strength to control the mind. So spiritual strength depends on, especially on hearing and chanting. We see that here some qualification is also ascribed to Maharaj Pariksit for due to his accumulated piety and birth in a high family of devotees, which was an additional asset. But sujyanti yasmai prabhavishnave namaha, that even those who are from low birth, they also can become purified through this process. So therefore, we should always, saptaparechanisnatam brahmani upasamasam, always absorb ourselves in transcendental sound vibration, hearing and chanting, and being with devotees who are hearing and chanting. Yes.
In the context of Krishna consciousness, what does dying on the bed of
In the context of Krishna consciousness, what does dying
on the battlefield.
On the battlefield. dying on the battlefield. What about dying on the battlefield? What does it mean? In the context of Krishna consciousness, what does dying on the battlefield mean? It depends on which battlefield. The battlefields that are existing today are the battlefields of demoniac leaders who are exploiting people. The soldiers are simply fighting a battle to exploit innocent people. They cause so much suffering to so many people. Maybe dying on such a battlefield, as if you are one of the aggressors, is a good thing, because at least you stop the aggression, right? So better die soon, right? For the victims, it's highly unfortunate. It must be the reaction to their previous sinful activities. It's just all unpalatable. Dying on a battlefield like Kurukshetra is a different thing. That is a war being fought under the direction of the Supreme Lord. That's a different matter. But such wars we don't have anymore. Therefore, nowadays, battlefields are just... Oh, you're talking about an allegorical battlefield, our own... Okay, you're in here in our own life. The battle. Life is the battlefield. Maya, our battle is with Maya. Our weapons are the holy name, Srimad Bhagavatam. Our support is the Vaishnavas, and so on and so on. All the transcendental attributes. If we take shelter with the help of very powerful associates and leaders, right? And if we are very careful taking shelter of the qualified acharyas and so on, then we can be successful. Only then can we be successful. Yeah. Alone, no chance. Alone, we'll never win the battle. Even if we are alone in Krishna consciousness, independent, doctoring ourselves, we'll never be successful. Just like one last story. In Vrindavan, when I used to live there, it was very difficult to find a good doctor. It's still difficult to find a good doctor. And therefore, we had a book in the temple which was called Where There Is No Doctor. And it was a very popular book. It was like all the pages were folded, and everyone was always looking in that book, because you had all the diseases were described and you could diagnose yourself, and there were all kinds of pictures and this, that, of the symptoms, and it was like very popular book. Yeah? So this tendency to doctor ourselves is very strong, and even while we are in this movement, we want to doctor ourselves with Srimad Bhagavatam, and this is the biggest problem. And because of that, we may not be successful in curing the disease, but if we actually take shelter of the proper spiritual masters and spiritual leadership and surrender to the senior Vaishnavas, then we can be successful in this battle. Guaranteed. Success guaranteed. With this, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.